This podcast is sponsored by Koolaboola, creators of websites, animation, and digital art. To get a 10% discount, go to koolaboola.com and put in the discount code SPEAKING.
Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube as Speaking Podcast. I also have the Awakening Podcast, the Learn Polish Podcast, the Meditation Podcast, and the Crypto Podcast, and all can be found on roycolin.com. Today, my guest, obviously you can see, author of Awakening the Soul of Power. Please welcome Christian De La Huerta.
Hey, Roy. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
So, as always, I like to let Christian tell the audience who you are.
You know what, Roy? I find it so kind of funny that I'm being interviewed in a speaking podcast, because I was so, for me, the journey to being a speaker has been such a long journey that it just kind of, it's interesting to me. I was really, really shy as a teenager. I was a K1-on-1, but if you added a third human, I clammed up. And speaking in front of a group, forget it. I mean, to the degree, listen to this story. I was a good student. I had a 4.0, which, you know, in the US is like the highest grades you could get. Except for 1B, so which means, you know, 80th to 90th percentile, one class in my entire high school career. And I didn't set out to do this intentionally, but looking back on it, I know that I did it subconsciously to sabotage my grade point average, because there is no way back then that I could have gotten up in front of an auditorium filled with hundreds and hundreds of people to deliver the valedictorian speech. It's just no way. There's no way that my psychology was able to do that, not even think of it. So, you know, flash forward to now, where I've spoken all over the world. I've spoken at dozens of universities. I've been on the TEDx stage. And so I know that all the fears and the obstacles that we allow ourselves to be held back by, that all that stuff can be healed and it can be cleared and it can be transcended.
Absolutely. And it's something I want to delve into further in our conversation, because with the breath work, I'm very interested in that. I'm in doing that myself. But I want to just kind of tap into the different speaking. So you said you spoke at universities. So you might just let us know, because sometimes you're trying to, you know, keep the students' attention. What things did you learn that you could share with people?
You know, I wasn't a professor at a university, so I wasn't an academic, but I was part of a college speaking circuit. So I had a speaking agent that booked me in different universities. And so I spoke on a couple of different diversity issues, and like I said, dozens of universities. And it was a really great experience, because I got to travel and you know, see a lot of different campuses. And it was a particular challenge, which was to keep the attention of a student body, you know, for an hour. And, you know, especially difficult in these days, as we know that everybody has ADD, and we're so used to, you know, to just being distracted, and we need to have it all in 30 seconds or 2 minutes. So yeah, it was interesting. And I did two different talks. One was more like, I didn't have the audiovisual stuff. I didn't have the slide, the PowerPoint presentation, but that one did have a powerful emotional and personal story part of it. So I think that's what was compelling, and it was different. It was unusual, a theme. So I think that's what made that one work. The other one, I did have a really well-made PowerPoint that I think got the attention of the student body.
And did you use the PowerPoint then to kind of trigger stuff yourself, or did you actually know it? And like, because I'm not sure what way you've done it, because I didn't see that one, but because I see sometimes people are turning around to see what the slide is. Other times they have the laptop in front of them, so they kind of know what's going. Just curious, what way have you done it?
I had the laptop in front of me. So yeah, it was both a combination of keeping the lecture going and reminding me, as well as you're pointing to, reminding me of what was coming next. So I saw the image, and I knew what if I got lost along the way, as I could know exactly what was next. Plus, you know, you get used to doing it. So once you use the visual as kind of a gauge is where you are. So do I need to speed it up a little bit? Do I need to go a little deeper here? So yeah, that was a helpful way to do it too.
So I know you do seminars as well, yeah?
See, yeah, I've been doing
how you organize it and just the details of it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been doing that, retreats and workshops, for more than 30 years. So that's been the majority of my work. My retreats are two forms. I do weekends, like long weekends. We come together on Thursday night, all day Friday, all day Saturday, and half a Sunday, allowing people to travel back home if they need to. The workshops could be 3 hours, could be an 8 hour, you know, an 8 hour day long workshop. I also do week long experiences that I call soulful treks. Not a trek technically in that you're hiking, but more like an adventure, like a spiritual adventure. So it's sort of like what if a retreat and a vacation got married and had a child, that would be this experience. So there are elements that are more touristic. So we go to beautiful places, but all with a spiritual theme or sub theme. Like we'll go to Hawaii or Southern France or Egypt or, you know, Peru. I'm taking a group to Peru next year, if we're able to travel, you know, safely, New Mexico. And so yeah, we do some, like, see what the get to know these beautiful places and have really amazing experiences that I set up. Sometimes work with a local shaman or teacher or medicine person. And then we also then do a couple of days of deep dive into the retreat work, including the breath work that you were alluding to.
And like with the plant medicine, ayahuasca, I presume you're talking about there.
Yeah, you know, I don't do the plant medicine in my retreats. I've been invited to speak at there's a place in Costa Rica that does that kind of work, the sacred plant medicine work. And I was a guest teacher, but I don't facilitate those experiences myself.
Okay. Yeah. And when it's like an 8 hour workshop, how do you kind of mentally prepare yourself, and how do you have like a kind of sheet in front of you to kind of structure yourself? What's your kind of secret sauce?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to do that anymore, but I certainly have in the beginning, you know, to keep myself on schedule, especially in a day long is almost more difficult than a weekend, because I've got them for just a limited amount of time. And once we dive deep into the dialogue, it's easy to lose track of time. And I know, for example, that I always finish a day long with a breath work. So I allow, you know, probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours for that session, including, you know, introduction, how do you do it, instructions. Then with the breathing part of it takes an hour and a half, depending on the group. And then I need to allow enough time for debriefing and to complete the day so that they don't know, they don't just don't leave in the middle of this expanded experience. So that's almost more challenging a day long for me, because just when we're getting ready to dive deep and people are really finally feeling like landing and feeling safe and beginning to open up, it's like, oops, time to go home. But for some people, that's what, you know, some people are not ready or able to commit to a whole weekend, which is a much deeper dive. We do 4 breathwork sessions in those. And what's powerful about those type of events is it's a combination of the cognitive understanding, like really understanding how the mind works, how the and in particular the ego mind and how it keeps us in a self-made prison of fear and self-doubt and self-sabotaging behaviors and reactivity, defensiveness, victim consciousness, and all the other ways that the ego mind works. And because that's critical. Like if we want to have relationships that have a chance of working, if we want to have a sense of personal empowerment, if we want to have a life that is filled with meaning and purpose, there's no way around it. We've got to understand how the mind works. And so it's a combination of that and understanding why we do the things we do, why we sabotage ourselves, what are our triggers, what kind of people or situations trigger us, why we get stuck in self-defeating behaviors in relationship patterns that sometimes have us thinking like, wow, I've seen this movie before. just had a different actor, had a different lead, co-lead, but it's the same boring movie, you know, the same kind of stuff coming up, same kind of patterns. So at some point we have to get honest and realize, you know what, there's only one common denominator in every one of those relationships and every one of those situations, and it's us. And then ask ourselves, why do we do the things we do? Why do we get stuck in those patterns? And it's work, right? It's work. It's hard work, and it's courageous work, because it requires diving deep into ourselves, and so that we can understand our patterns and face our inner demons. So that's why this book is part of a series of three, and which is titled Calling All Heroes. Like, what does it mean to live heroically in the 21st century? When we don't have the horse hitched outside and the armors and the demons to slay, except the ones in our own heads. And so yes, heroic work, and infinitely worthwhile, because once we understand those patterns, then we can free ourselves. Freedom is the reward. And all those other things that I was saying, you know, the relationships that actually have a chance at working. Because we can't do anything about something that we don't see. We can't heal. We can't address something that's in the subconscious. So that's why self-awareness is the first step.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure, was it a breathwork session that kind of got me over? I was very late speaking. You know, it's only 4 years that I kind of started joining the Toastmasters and everything. And I had gone to an event, and I know I did breathwork for the first time there. But I know that for me, like, there was teachers just ridiculing you or making you come up in the class and just, you know, discussing your grades and everything. And I was the kind of person, I was either first in the class or last in the class. And, you know, I had one teacher, I came last in history, 18%. He said my grandmother would do better, and she's been dead 10 years. And I don't know, was it something like that? But I was terrified of actually speaking. And I think, like, the breath work, because there's a lot, we all have baggage, you know, we've all been through, you know, we think it's only us, but the reality is everybody's got something. The way we grow up, you know, bullies, everything, there's so many different things going on. And I think that breath work is actually the secret sauce for this, because I have seen people break up. I don't know, maybe I've been at maybe 5-6 different type of facilitators that were doing it, different types. I have seen people just really breaking down, but they got release. And I think, you know, once you kind of, it's like the butterfly, you're not going back there.
Right. You can't reverse that process. Yeah, you're right. You know, for me too, like, breathwork is what changed my life. My dad was a psychiatrist. My degree's in psychology. I was on track to get a PhD in psychology. When I discovered breathwork, I jumped tracks. I never went for the PhD, because it works so fast and it heals so profoundly at so many levels. Like I don't know anything more effective in terms of healing past trauma, like the one you're talking about with the teacher, which I can totally relate to, by the way. Yeah, you know what? I know, because it also heals. Not only does it heal mentally and emotionally, but it heals spiritually and even physically. And yes, I know that sounds too good to be true. For the more logical, scientific, skeptical part of my mind, even 30 years later, I still, when I hear those words come out of my mouth, it still sounds too good to be true, that just from breathing, all that stuff can happen. Because on top of the healing, which is the main reason we do it, you can also have incredible, profound, spiritual, for lack of another word, experiences. Like you're mentioning sacred medicine work, a lot of times I have people come to a breathwork session, and they'll say, you know what, I got to that same place that I got to on ayahuasca journey or mushroom journey or whatever kind of journey. So those kind of experiences that are, you know, called unitary experiences, where we feel connected to and part to it all, to all the cosmos, to all of life, to something greater than ourselves. You know, that's available just from breathing. And once you experience that, you know, it's like you're saying, you can't undo that. Like stuff that like you read about, that one thing is reading about it, another one is like experiencing it in your body, in your cells. And once you have that sense of just seeing the interconnectedness of it all, it's like you can't forget that.
Absolutely. And I've never done ayahuasca myself. I'm curious about it, but I know a lot of people that have. But with the breath work I've done, I've gone on amazing journeys. And, like I've been in rooms of, I don't know, over 100 people. And I'm the last one just lying there. Like, I don't sit up and everything. I just go into my position is lying down. I feel comfortable that way. I go through the breath work and I just go off. And I see things I've never seen before. It is unbelievable. But I find, I don't know, is it because I've kind of, meditation, that's definitely helped me, you know, kind of forgiveness and gratitude and stuff like that. But I believe the breath work, because I'm extremely productive. I mean, I'm doing like now 5 podcasts, and I'm editing and everything, and I'm doing other stuff as well. I'm writing stuff as well as doing property. And I'm convinced it's the breath work that I'm so focused, and that when I'm doing something, I'm there and I'm poof, and I feel that I'm calm. I don't get upset over stuff that I see other people, they start freaking out over different things. I mean, I've had 100 court cases. No, like, it's not saying that I wasn't previous to doing any of this breath work. So I would be basically, my stomach would be sick for a week nearly beforehand. I couldn't sleep or anything. No, I go in there and it's nothing to me. And I'm just can't. And I'm convinced it's the breath work.
Yeah. I get it. Like, after my very first session, I knew that I would never be the same. I wasn't. My life went in a whole other direction. And the connection to meditation is a really interesting one. A lot, and it's not a replacement for regular meditation practice. There are a lot of benefits for that, but breath work is kind of a shortcut too. Like, it gets us to some of those places of no mind that allows us to have that, you know, that kind of experiences that you're talking about, of seeing stuff we've never seen before. I've had people come to a breathwork session and then tell me afterwards, I've been sitting on a meditation cushion for 20 years to have that moment of no mind that I had in the session. So it kind of creates the pathways to those experiences more easily. There are other benefits of sitting in meditation, which, you know, to be honest, you know, most of the time when we're sitting on a meditation cushion and counting our breath or repeating a mantra, or whatever we do, most of the time it's going to be really boring. Like, you know, that's what we're going to do. Oh, there. And then we notice, oh, there I went, you know, doing my shopping list, back to the breath. Oh, there I went, thinking about my colleague said to me yesterday, oh, back to the breath. Oh, there I go, like planning what I'm gonna tell them when I get to the office. This is what I really should have told them. Oh, back to the breath. Most of the time, it's that practice. But that's the practice, and the benefit. That's sort of like learning, you know, the piano chords, so that you're preparing for the concert, or learning how to dribble before you can play in a basketball game. It's that practice of self-observation, of noticing our thoughts and noticing what we're feeling, noticing our breath, noticing our physical sensations that come in when the rubber hits the road and we're about to get into an argument. We're about to say something that we're then going to say or do something that we're going to regret, because that's what the cycle is, right? We'll react and then say something that we then regret. And then we got to go clean up the mess. So that regular meditation practice, even if it's 10 minutes a day, 3 times a week, that's enough to begin to develop that self-awareness, so that right before we go over the waterfall, it's like, oh, that one hurt. How do I want to be, right? How do I want to show up in response at choice, rather than just that boring reaction of the ego? They do this, I do that. They do this, boring. We've done it 1,000 times and we've gotten into trouble 1,000 times for it. So meditation is what allows us that presence of mind, that moment that we need to make a different choice.
Absolutely. And like, what I see is, especially where the parents have split, because, you know, I got divorced, but I've got a wonderful relationship with my ex-wife, and which is rare. But, you know, like any other situation, I mean, obviously you can get on somebody's, and just by not reacting, just by, you just let it sizzle if there is a situation. But yeah, Unfortunately, I see 95% of people, they're using children as pawns, and then it's just a verbal match in front of the child. And I think that if you're showing love for your child, if you really say you love your child, you should actually start doing this, because you're not going to be doing that, because the one person that is getting hurt and that's being tarred, that doesn't even realize it till later, that it's going into their deep inside, is the child that's witnessing this.
Yeah, that's the tragic part of it. And you're right. That's where we get caught in these power games and these power struggles. And in some cases, sadly, use the kids as weapons and control mechanisms. And it's nobody wins. Nobody wins. And that's why I wrote this book. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book, about how do we not get stuck in power struggles, like really understanding what's going on when we get stuck in these power struggles and then this need to win, which is all, by the way, it's just the realm of the ego, this need to win, the need to be right. And so that's why the combination is really good between the breath work and understanding the mind and why we do the things we do. It's the combination is what's really powerful.
Like, I've done some of breath work, because I know the guy who created a Niraj, Breath of One, the Wim Hof method. Which ones do you do, different ones, or do you use a specific type?
Well, you know, for your audience, it's breath work is a very broad umbrella term. So there are a lot of breathing practices, breathing techniques. Like anybody who's gone to a yoga class knows that, you know, pranayama, that, you know, breathing practices that are done for different purposes. There's certain breathing techniques that are help to relax, help with stress management, help with sleeping better. And there are other ones that are like focusing and energizing, and, you know, like good to do right before an important meeting or a podcast interview or something like that. But the breath work that you and I are talking about are longer sessions. Like the breath work, the one that I do was originally called rebirthing. I think there's still some people that still call it that. I stopped calling it that many, many years ago because it's confusing. They call it rebirthing because one of the things that breath work does is heal past trauma, as what we're talking about. And the trauma of birth is like, everybody has that trauma. You know, the process of birth is traumatizing for everybody involved, no matter which part of the process you're in. So that's why they call it rebirthing, because a lot of people will relive that experience of birth, of going through the birth canal. And by the way, I've had men even have the memory of even going through the mother part of it. Like, you know, they're lying on the floor and their legs are up as if they were on stirrups. And it makes sense, because at that point in our lives, we were one with the mother. So it makes sense that we share some of those memories. And then they have the experience of going through the birth canal. And so it's sort of like resetting. It's like rebooting, and you start over again. And those birth traumas have an effect on aspects of our lives, as do all sorts of traumas, you know, like the one you're talking about of a teacher in such a cruel, unenlightened way to treat a student. And I had a similar experience that you did. That's what, when you said that, it resonated for me. So when I was in third grade, you know, I got one of those childhood illnesses. I forget what it was, mumps or whatever it was. And so I was gone for like 3 weeks. And so when I got back, they were doing the multiplication tables in math, and I was like lost. And I grew up the first 10 years of life in Cuba. And, you know, so I grew up in a communist regime. And in the minute that you apply for a permission to leave, like a visa to leave the country, you were immediately ostracized, because you were considered like you were a traitor to the revolution. And you were called gusano, you know, which means worm. And you know, it's like, this is the hard part, that I can't understand how a teacher could have done that to you or to a third grader. But the teachers, my sister and I, we used to be at the top of the class all the time until we applied for permission. My family applied for permission to leave. And then not only did we never get any more awards, but they wouldn't even give us cookies at break. And they were cruel. And I think that was part of the reason for me too, that I had, that, you know, because of that experience in third grade, that I had a difficulty and was sort of traumatized by speaking in public, and didn't want to do that, didn't want to be seen too much. So it's what humans do to humans. Is sometimes it's hard to understand how we're able to do the things we do to each other. And the beautiful, powerful message of breathwork is that all that stuff, no matter what it was, can be healed. And I say that knowingly, you know, knowing that people experience much more difficult traumas than the ones you and I are talking about. And, you know, I've worked with people who experience, you know, abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, people who survive really violent stuff, and they're able to heal it through breath. And you know, it's like, to my rational mind, as I was saying before, it's hard to understand, like when I hear myself saying this stuff, how it works, because they haven't done the study that the all the scientific research they've done on meditation and what's happening in the brain when we meditate. There's a lot of research on that and productivity and the benefits, not only in terms of health, but productivity at work and all that good stuff. They're not there yet in terms of the breath work. But here's what helps me understand it, how it works, that just from breathing, all that stuff can happen. In most religions, in most spiritual traditions in the world, the same word, one word, can mean spirit or breath, depending on context. So from the ancient pneuma, you know, the ancient Greek pneuma meant both lung and soul. From the Latin root spirare, we get both respiration and inspiration or expiration. And even in some secular languages, that's the case. And so that's what begins to help me understand, you know, how it works. And it's more from a psycho-spiritual perspective. It's not that scientific research is in there yet.
I think, I mean, I've got another podcast where I'm exposing fraud and corruption, but I've been kind of understanding so many things that have been going on for years. But even with the medical industry, and I reckon they know, and it's just been hidden, or they block the people that are actually shown. They're well aware of what works and what doesn't. It's just that now we realize, you know, the media is owned by, I don't know, 90% of the media is 4 or 5 corporations. They just regurgitate all the propaganda, all the lies. I mean, from your Cuba, you know, like there's terrible things going on there at the moment, but nobody sees it because it's all blocked. The press don't, you know, it's only because of people from Cuba actually sharing it. All the people out in the streets, you know, protesting about, you know, the atrocities going on in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the, it's the internet, right? The global brain. And that, I was just reading an article last night about how when Obama went to, you know, had a meeting with Raul Castro some years ago, that he was really criticized and judged by the conservatives here in this country and by the Cuban American exile community, which has this really hard stance about any kind of communication, and they're against getting rid of the embargo. Whereas, you know, it's like, hey, I'm Cuban too. I want that country to be free. But it's been 62 years, you know, that practice has not worked. The embargo has not worked. The only people that are really suffering are the people, you know, the government and the military, they're not suffering. And so the interesting thing about that I was reading in that article about Obama is that it was almost like a time release bomb, that because of that meeting, they started opening up and they opened up the internet. And now it's like, oops. You know, that's one of the things that allowed these protests to spread like wildfire all over the country, which is the first time in decades that the people have actually gotten together and arisen. It's like, say, hey, enough, enough. And it's a combination of that with, you know, they're just like, because of the pandemic, they're like they're really suffering, really suffering. And Cuba that has, like, it's known worldwide for the quality of the doctors they produce, but in Cuba itself, for the 99%, they don't have access to good medical care. They don't. They're starving to death. They hardly have food to eat. And that's what they're finally saying, like, enough, enough.
I think, like, what's going on in the world now with all the sharing and the social media, because, like, I don't think people realize how powerful it is. And it kind of goes back to the speaking side as well, because you're promoting yourself, but also you know, sometimes by speaking up, you know, by just kind of like what you're, you know, the breath work that you're doing, you're making a huge change. You made a shift, because I don't think you would have even put 1% if you had continued your education and went down that route. Because, you know, it's just, unfortunately, the education system for that is kind of false. You believe it at the time because that's what they're teaching and you just assume it's right. But thankfully, you went down a different route. And I think with some of the speakers as well, sometimes people are just speaking and doing different things, but when you can make an impact, make a difference, it is so much better to use your skill set to improve mankind.
Yeah, beautifully said. And that's what drives me, Roy. It's like I'm basically introverted, which means that I process things internally. Like I'm most comfortable and get clear about who I am and how I feel about stuff, what I think by myself. As opposed to an extrovert, which is kind of figuring out what they believe and what they think as they're speaking it. So spending time alone for me is really important. And what allows me to do what I do, to get up in front of a room with 1,000 people and to be, you know, to have been interviewed on dozens of podcasts like this one is that sense of mission that you're talking about, that sense of purpose, is like knowing that what I do, if this conversation touches one life, then it's worth it. Then it was worth it. And so that's what drives what I do. Everything that I do is driven and inspired by that. And yeah, like the reason that I switched, like I was on a track to get that PhD in psychology. The reason that I jumped tracks is because of what you're talking about. Because the breathwork works so fast, and it's not to put therapy down, right? Psychotherapy in the right hands with the right, you know, like goals and intentions, and a time frame can be make a real difference in people's lives. But here's why it most often falls short, because understanding what happened to us when we were 5 or 10 or 15 is good, is better than not understanding. For sure. But understanding is not enough, because that trauma that used to be a memory doesn't live in the mind anymore. It's been somaticized. So it now lives in the body. So no amount of talking about it is going to get to it. So that's why I sometimes, you know, like with all due respect to the psychotherapy tradition, but sometimes I get people that have been sitting on somebody's couch for 20 years, for 30 years, rehashing the same old crap. And nothing has really happened in terms of they still find themselves in limiting behavior patterns and beliefs about themselves. And that's why, that's the beauty of breathwork. That's why breathwork works so fast, is because it bypasses the mind and it goes to the source of that trauma, which now lives in the body, and it clears it at the physical level, at the cellular level. And yeah, I know this sounds kind of too good to be true and woo-woo, but it works. Like I can't argue with the results. I've done it all over the world. Before the pandemic, for the last couple of years before the pandemic, I went to China 3-4 times a year. I was working with high level corporate leaders, tech leaders, billionaires, millionaires, and it works. You know, it'll be interesting to see now, because breathwork, I think, was following that kind of trajectory that I think it is still, that meditation did or that yoga did, in terms of being recognized publicly, by a lot of people, by the masses. Interestingly, the pandemic kind of slowed down that process for a bit, but we'll see what happens afterward, because I still haven't started my retreats yet, because I need to, part of my job is to create a safe environment, not only psychologically and emotionally and spiritually, but also physically. So we need to feel safe to be breathing powerfully together in the same room, and one, even if it's a large space. So I'm hoping that, maybe by the end of the year, we'll be able to do live events again.
So, and you mentioned, some people, they have customers for 10 to 30 years. And I believe like the memory of pain poisons us, it poisons ourselves. So when you regurgitate it, like I know that because I lost everything at one stage. I went through a financial loss, lost all my houses, my personal belongings and everything. And I overcame that by just actually through meditation, to be honest, which it was, you know, just forgiveness and thing. So then when I talk about it, it's something to me. But I know that prior to that, when you talk about it and you're telling people the kind of poor me kind of story, which is the same with a lot of people, whether they've been abused, whatever the situation, you're reliving it and you're hurting. So you're actually just repeating. And how can you get out of it, curing it when you're going through that cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. You get stuck in that same rut of if you haven't cleared it at the cellular level, then you're just rehashing it. And either stuck, it gets you deeper and deeper into that poor me, woe is me. How could they do that to me? And then all the choices that we make because of that, right? Choices about we can't trust other people. We can't trust a particular group of people, whether it's men or women or whatever. And the thing is that it's tragic because all those old traumas are still having an impact on our lives and our relationships and the quality of our relationships. And that's where we get stuck in these patterns of relationships that just don't work because we're actually sabotaging them before we get started by attracting the wrong people, by falling for people who are just not a match. And it doesn't mean we're better. It doesn't mean we're worse. They're just not a match, right? We're just different places in life, different values, whatever. We have different goals in life, whatever the difference is, it's just not a match. And, you know, the willingness to go inside and do the work, there's got to be a match in that, the work of self-healing and self-discovery. I know, like the power of the breath in healing. And again, like when we put it in combination with the teachings that I share in this book, about the ego mind and about the why we get stuck in power struggles and how we step into our own personal power in a way that's different, right? Because part of the reason so many of us have an ambivalent, conflicted relationship to power is because we've been conditioned to believe that it's bad, that it's wrong, that it's that, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what they didn't tell us is that quote by Lord Acton, he was speaking specifically about political power, not personal power, which is what we're talking about here. And so, you know, combine that with the fact that we also fear that if we really stepped into our power, other people wouldn't be able to handle it and we might end up alone. Or that if we really stepped into our power, that we might abuse it and cause harm. And no wonder, you know, all we got to do is turn on the news or read through the headlines in the morning on any given day to witness at least one abuse of power. And why good-hearted person wants to do that? You know, we don't want the type of power that requires that we push somebody down, that we control them by fear, by force, by domination, that we push them down, we put our knee to their neck in order for us to feel powerful. Like, we don't really want to do that. You know, we don't want to be corrupted. And so what the message of this book is that there's a way that we can step into power that is a match with who we are, right? That doesn't require that we do all those things and push people down and manipulate them and use fear or force or domination. There's a way that we can step into our power that is a match with our innate nature. And that's what I walk people by the hand in this book.
And is it that you have three parts of it, or you're playing on three volumes of the book?
Yeah, this is the series is three books. The series is about calling all heroes. What does it mean to live a heroic life in the 21st century? The first book is this one, Awakening the Soul of Power, which is like how does a hero, and I use that term, you know, gender neutrally, because I don't like the word shiro. I love words, and that word shiro just doesn't do it for me because hero, you know, has nothing to do with he or she. The Latin root had nothing to do with gender. And so I just don't like the word shiro. And also, you know, so how do we step into power, right? That's the first one. The second one is relationships. Like, how do we do relationships consciously? How does a hero do relationships consciously? Oh, what I lost my thought, because the other, the technical correct term, heroine, smacks of something else. So I just use hero generically. And so same, the third book is about life purpose and conscious leadership, which connects to the theme of your podcast. Like how do we break free from these ways that we have allowed ourselves to be held back by? And how do we step into these roles that we know we've been here to do, or which is really what's going to bring us fulfillment? Like, you know, hopefully everybody listening to this or watching this knows by now that no amount of money, no amount of worldly success is gonna make us happy. And like, how many more examples of celebrities, of famous people, of powerful people do we need? And there's some really good recent examples. So you could have all the money and all the power in the world, and you could be freaking miserable and thin-skinned, and one tweet can set you know your self-esteem just into the ground and set off the cycle of reactivity and defensiveness, which is pitiful to witness. And how many more celebrities, you know, with all the money you could want, the fame, and they have problems with substances, they commit suicide disproportionately. So, and hopefully by now we all know that there is no relationship that's going to make us happy. There isn't anybody out there that's going to make us happy. And how unfair to put that on somebody else, to put that responsibility. So you are going to make me happy. Wow, that's a heavy responsibility. And so it's not even their job to do that. Only we can make ourselves happy. And so hopefully, you know, once we get that, that's the next step. Like really figuring out what we're here for, at a soul level, at a mission level. So what our purpose is, and how we stop playing small and stop lighting, you know, like hiding our light under a bushel. And really giving 100% fulfillment to this, or expression to this unique human potential. There isn't anybody out there, anybody that has the same genetics, the same set of experiences that make us unique. So if we don't give expression to that unique human potential, nobody else is going to do it. And I think that's what's going to make us happy, to really discover who we are and to express it powerfully and courageously. And gracefully in the world.
Beautiful. Yeah, love it. And yeah, I mean, obviously you've seen in your career that there is a lot more. Because as I tell people, once you see somebody, I call it waking up, you know, because you just kind of accept life. You realize there's something more important than chugging through life to pay a mortgage, to have a car that you're not really sitting in. And, you know, you just get it. But you must have witnessed recently, the last couple of years, the amount of people that are actually getting it. And it's great to see, because and not only, you know, people that are in their 40s, 50s, but you're seeing people 18 that are getting it, and you're going, whoa, this is fantastic.
Yes. And that's one of the ways, you know, without minimizing the tragic parts of the pandemic and all the death and the economic impact and all the stuff that we're still witnessing, and we're not out of the woods yet. Or close to it, but we can see some of the blessings already and some of the gifts. And like you're saying, it's like, yeah, I've known a lot of people that, you know, either the mandatory global timeout, like forced them to go within and ask these hard questions and forced them to like, wait a minute, like to see the fragility of life and how we're here today. Like we never know when it's going to be our time. And so, And so it broke through that distraction and the numbing that we do, that we run away from ourselves, from our deepest selves. We run away from our emotions, you know, because and from our past, our inner demons. So we're so creative at numbing out. You know, whether it's substances, you know, drugs or alcohol or sex or television or gaming in computers or workaholism, shopping. So we're so creative in running away from ourselves and not feeling. But those strategies aren't effective, because that stuff that we're running away from doesn't go away, right? It's in the body, and it's still having an impact on us from the subconscious, on the quality of our lives and relationships. And so that's the blessing that for many people, not everybody, but for many people, it was a wake up call. And also the tragic part of so many people who lost jobs. But there was a blessing in that, because how many of us were selling ourselves cheaply for that illusion of security of a biweekly paycheck? Because if you tell me, okay, I'm making, you know, $750,000 a year, then we can talk about selling ourselves. Maybe even $500,000 a year, we can talk about selling ourselves. But most of us are selling ourselves really cheaply for that illusion of security, illusion, because those companies that we give our souls to, you know, that we sell our unique human potential to, are here today, gone tomorrow. How many companies had to close their doors because of the pandemic? And so, yeah, tragic, no question about it. But if the people were willing to do the work, then they were forced to ask the hard questions. Well, what am I really doing here? And who am I really? And what do I really want to do with this precious, precious life that I have? And am I going to continue selling myself out for this illusion of security? Also illusion, because the entire global economic system is made up. Like we used to think it's paper. It's not even paper. It's ones and zeros up on a cloud somewhere. Like it doesn't even exist, really.
But you have to do sweat labor to pay it back from something they press on a computer screen to give you a number.
Yeah. 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 So what are we going to place our trust on? Right. That's the deeper question that this pandemic has forced many people to ask. And what am I going to do with my life? And so for people who were willing to do that heroic searching, because those are not easy questions. They're existential questions, but the rewards are infinite, because it gets us to the truth and it gets us to identify our real core values. And that shifts everything.
Absolutely. I think that if you dread getting out of bed on a Monday morning, you need to re-examine what you're doing in your life. You should be every day should be, you know, appreciating every day.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Listen, yes. Christian, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I know that people that are listening, because there's a lot of people that fear public speaking. This is something to investigate with the breathwork, you know, listen to all that's been discussed today, because I have witnessed this on numerous occasions. I've been to, I don't know how many times, 20 times with about 6 different facilitators. I have seen people transform and they've never returned. And you've obviously, you know, multiples of that have witnessed that. So we just, you know, just encourage you to check it out, you know, just check it out. You've nothing to lose. It's not going to, slap you into the head. If anything, it's going to free your head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much, Roy. I really, really have enjoyed our conversation and I love what you're up to. I love all the different themes of your podcast and I honor your willingness, you know, for pushing through your own fears and the stuff that could have held you back, but you said, no, I'm not allowing this to hold me back. And out of your choice of breaking free from that past stuff, like here you are, you know, reaching tons of people. Like, you know, how many people are being impacted through your message and the guests that you bring on your podcast. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing that and for saying yes to your own call for heroism.
So how can people get in contact with you? Because I know I'll have it on the podcast description, but sometimes people won't actually do that. They'll just be listening on their audio. So it's good to actually hear where they can find you.
Yeah, thank you. The book is available on Amazon, wherever books are sold, at your local bookstore. They just need to order it if they don't already have it. In terms of reaching me, probably my best way is my website, which is soulfulpower.com. Soulfulpower.com. From there, they can access my social media. And for your audience, if they will sign up to be on my email list, and we all know how easy it is to click unsubscribe if it doesn't work for you at some point. But just by signing up for my email list now, they'll get a sample chapter of the book. And it's a chapter that talks about what it means to live heroically. They'll get some power practices that are designed to apply those teachings to our lives so that it doesn't stay at the level of information. Like, we don't need more information. We've got information overload. What we need is transformation. And that's what those teachings are designed to do. Those practices are designed to do. And then they'll get a guide, a recorded teaching and a guided meditation about trust. which I find is very supportive in these chaotic, uncertain times.
Thanks very much. And as I said, I put it on podcast description for both the audio and the video. It's been excellent talking to you, Christian. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com or on BitChute or on YouTube. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, share with your friends. Until next week, take care.
This podcast is sponsored by Koolaboola, creators of websites, animation, and digital art. To get a 10% discount, go to koolaboola.com and put in the discount code SPEAKING.